Hey, just a quick word before we jump into today's show. Our sister site, Post Show Recaps, our scripted TV podcast, is nominated for two podcast awards in 2016 for the Best TV and Film Podcast and the People's Choice Podcast of the Year. We certainly do appreciate any support you want to give us for the daily voting that's going on from now until June 12th. So while you're listening to the podcast, you could do us a solid and go ahead and vote at podcastawards.com in the TV and Film and People's Choice category for Post Show Recaps in the 2016 Podcast Awards, all at podcastawards.com. We got a quick word from Wix.com and we'll jump into Talking Edgic with Zach Vossler.
A great business needs a stunning website. And with Wix.com, you can do it all by yourself. Wix.com makes it easy to look amazing online, no matter what type of business you're in. Show off your images in a beautiful gallery, grow your contact list, and get all your social media in one place, just the way you want. Your customers are going to love it. So, what are you waiting for? Show the world what you can do. Go to Wix.com and create your stunning website today. It's easy and free.
Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cicerone back here with another one of our Survivor off-season podcasts. And today we're going to be talking about a very hot button controversial issue. I feel like it never really was a controversial issue, but I feel like it really sort of boiled over here after Survivor Ko Rong. We're going to be talking about Edgic. And so today, we're going to be joined by a good friend of the podcast. You've heard him before. We actually talked Big Brother Canada during Big Brother Canada 3. Returning to the podcast here today is Zach Vossler. Zach, how are you?
Good, Rob. Thank you. How are you? Yes, my one appearance on the Big Brother Canada 3 podcast.
Yes.
After Jordan Parhart got kicked out.
Yes.
After he was evicted.
Well, yeah. It started off the Jordan Parhart era here on the podcast. So
it
was an important moment and happy to have you back to talk about Edgic, because this is something that really sort of, you know, it's existed. I've known of it for a long time. I've never been super into following it, so I'm excited to get a bit of an education about it today, more so than I already have. But it really became sort of like a bit taboo even by the end of Survivor Ko Rong, because a little bit of frustration with the Michelle wins true thing going on. So excited to talk some Edgic here today and really get an understanding of why exactly this happened now and what Edgic is and whether or not people need to be afraid of it going forward.
Yeah, it's certainly not anything to be afraid of, and I'm ready to demystify, I think, Edgic.
Good.
As best as I can. And I noticed that you said, you know, you are going to get an education today.
Education. So, good. All right. That's the front runner right now for the hashtag. All right. So, Zach, for people who don't know you at all, could you talk a little bit about what your experience is with Edgic?
Sure. So I was a bit of a latecomer to Survivor. My first season was actually China. And when I started watching in China, I got very into following along with the show, and I made my way to Survivor Sucks. And I remember seeing in posts about the episodes, people would post these abbreviations and would talk about Edgic, and I didn't know what that meant. And it seemed confusing to me, but I was interested in it. And I think my first season with Edgic was Gabon.
Okay.
So then two seasons later, there was an offshoot in the Survivor Sucks. It was called Edgic. And, you know, I looked and there were these charts everywhere and they were talking about the edit and they were talking about all this stuff. And it seemed very interesting to me. And so starting with Gabon, you know, I started to follow along with Edgic really closely.
And could you just give us a very quick explanation of what it is for people who are on board and maybe kind of know what it is, but tell us exactly what Edgic is.
So Edgic, it's basically a game that the people who are into it play along during the season. And the people who are taking part try to pick the winner by looking at the editing player by player and applying logic from past editing patterns or observations about what we have been shown either during this season or during previous seasons. So the Edgic comes from the combination of edit and logic. So you put those two words together and that gives you Edgic.
And how long has Edgic been going on for?
So Edgic started by a poster on Survivor Sucks, who goes by the handle Colonel Q, during Survivor Marquesas, partway through that season. And then Edgic kind of officially started during Thailand, and has been going ever since. And at some point during the course of, you know, during the course of the seasons, you know, Edgic went back and did Edgic for Borneo and Australia and Africa and for the full Marquesas season. And it's been going since then. So,
and so how does Edgic work? Because I think a lot of us have also like seen there's a chart and there's abbreviations. So could you sort of explain how exactly it all goes down? And is there one chart necessarily, or are there a bunch of different interpretations of what's happening?
Edgic has kind of developed over the years, and it's become less about finding patterns in the edit and really more about story analysis. And the biggest thing that people doing Edgic are looking for is editorial manipulation. And I'll talk a lot about this as we go along. But it's basically, what have the editors chosen to include and what have the editors chosen to not include? Because they have to tell a story of 39 days in about 12 or 13 hours of television. So the choices they make are really important. And the ratings kind of give a shorthand of where things stand. And this is kind of where it gets a little technical, but I'm going to try and break it down as concisely and simply as possible.
Okay.
So you look at a chart and you see all of these symbols, you see all of these colors, you see abbreviations, and looking at it the first time, it's intimidating, and I can understand that. So the basic system and the tool that's most familiar to people who do Edgic and people who don't is the chart. And the chart contains, along the left-hand side will be the names of all of the castaways on a particular season. And along the top, you'll see the episode. And then for each episode, a player is kind of given a score for a particular episode. And that score consists of three parts. First is the rating. Second is the number that reflects their visibility, and the third is their tone. Mm-hmm. So I'll start with the visibility because that's the easiest one to explain. And this is really the one place where the math is. I know a lot of people who are only slightly familiar with Edgic or unfamiliar with Edgic, they say, oh, Edgic is math. It's math. It's counting confessionals, and that tells you the winner. But that's not really what it is.
And I said that the other day when I was talking with Molly Schock. And really, I sort of look at this as sort of two parts of the same subject matter, where we talked about editing as a process with Molly Schock. And you can find that on robiswebsite.com. And I said, because an editor will tell you that Edgic doesn't exist. I think that for the most part, from the editors that I've spoken with, they say that there's no system of how they do it. Whereas many people in the Edgic community tell you, of course it exists. And there's the facts to back it up that this is science. And that's where I got math from in terms of math versus poetry was how I described it with Molly.
Yeah, I mean, the math does exist. Edgic does exist. I mean, we know, anybody who does Edgic knows that there's nothing hanging on the wall in the editing bay that says, you know, the winner must have X confessionals in this episode. You know, we're looking at, you know, the whole picture. But the visibility is the one thing that's based on a formula. And there are some very dedicated and studious Edgic contributors that take into account the number of sentences each player speaks, the number of confessionals they have, and the number of questions they're asked by Jeff at Tribal Council. And that is calculated in relation to the total number of sentences spoken by every contestant that episode, the total number of confessionals by everyone, and the total number of Tribal Council questions.
Okay, that's interesting to me because in terms of visibility, I didn't know that we were talking about things beyond confessionals. So that you could have somebody who is like all over the episode but doesn't have a lot of confessionals, and that still counts as highly visible.
Yes, it still counts. So based on a sliding scale, then visibility ratings are assigned from 1, which is the lowest visibility, to 5, which is someone who's basically everywhere. Now, not every episode has somebody with a 1. Not every episode has someone with a 5. Some episodes have a lot of people with 1s. Some episodes have a lot of people with 5s. What I found was probably the best example of this So the third episode of Survivor Blood versus Water, which is the episode when Colton quits, when Rachel is eliminated at Redemption Island, and John Cody is voted out. Of the 19 players still left in the game of that episode, five of them had fives for visibility. So Brad Culpepper, John Cody, RS Vias, and Tyson. Wow. So they were heavily featured in that episode. And what that means is because it's a sliding scale, because there's only so much speaking in a particular episode of Survivor to go around, the more people you have with fives, the less there is to go around. So of the 14 other castaways in that episode, 11 of them got a one or a two.
Okay.
So you didn't see, so it was heavily featuring Brad and John Cody, RSV doesn't Tyson. That means, and to an extent Colton, because he quit. Everybody else was kind of pushed into the background that episode.
So is the way that this system is determined, is this agreed upon by everybody who follows EDGIC? Like, is there one system or are there offshoots from the original Captain Q system?
Colonel Q.
Colonel Q.
Colonel Q. There are different interpretations. The reason why I started with the visibility is because that's the one that is the most accepted. I mean, and the least open to interpretation, I guess, because this is the only one where math is involved. And the other ones that we're going to get into, this is the one where it's really open to a viewer's interpretation.
Okay.
And when you see an EDGIC chart for a season, you know, the quote unquote official chart, you know, that is the consensus of what the people who are involved have given as the rating for that episode for that particular survivor.
All right. Well, that makes sense.
Moving on from the visibility then into the rating. So this is where the interpretation starts. So each castaway in each episode is giving one of five ratings. And those five ratings are OTT, which stands for over the top, CP, which stands for complex personality, MOR, stands for middle of the road, UTR, which is under the radar, and INV, which is invisible. And I'm going to take them one at a time rather than, you know, go through them all at once. So the first one is over the top. Over the top has been defined as a character that inside that one episode, because it's only one episode at a time, is oversimplified or is presented as a one-dimensional, one-note caricature. They're used to create drama, distract us from the winner. These are the people we love to love and love to hate. They're usually fairly visible in that episode, but they're given a really low amount of footage that is relevant to the game. But, you know, it's a lot of conflict or it's a lot of emotion. Some examples through history of contestants who have been given over the top episodes. If you think about Coach, pretty much through all of Token Sheens, you know, he was portrayed as being kind of goofy, being out of touch. If you think about Rupert in his first two episodes and his last two episodes of Pearl Islands, where he's portrayed as this pirate hero. You think about Rodney in the damn birthday episode of Worlds Apart. You know, there's not a lot of game talk coming from these contestants in these episodes. It's really just a lot of drama, or it's a lot of emotion, or it's just a lot of, you know, it's a lot of character stuff, but not as much game stuff.
Who from Ko-Rong ended up being OTT?
The most over the top would probably be Debbie.
Debbie?
Yes. I mean, she called herself the coach. You know, she related herself to Coach, and that's pretty much, of all of the people in the season, she definitely would be the most over the top.
Okay.
You think about, you know, her first episode where she's, the editors are kind of in on this because she's talking about all the jobs she had and everyone's looking at her like this woman is crazy. And then the chyron at the bottom of the screen, every time Debbie had a confessional, it's giving us a different job, you know? So that's over the top. CP is complex personality. And that's defined as a character that in an episode emerges as a personality that is well-rounded and well-developed intellectually, emotionally, personally, and strategically. Their editing has depth. We get strengths and weaknesses. We get to see their choices, and we get to get insight into their thinking behind these choices. These are the people who have a very well-rounded edit in a particular episode. If such a thing exists as a best rating, this would be the one to get. Most winners have a very large number of CP ratings over the course of a season because the edit wants to portray them as complex at several points in the story because the story is ultimately going to be about them and about how they won.
Got it.
Some examples of people who have been CP through history. You, for example, in Amazon.
Oh, yeah. So it definitely doesn't mean that you win.
It doesn't always mean that you win, but it means that you're portrayed as strategic. You're portrayed as strategic and given insight into your thinking. You were given CP in 11 out of 13 episodes of Survivor the Amazon. Right. Steven and Tokenshins.
Yeah, nobody gives CP like me.
Yeah, exactly. Steven and Tokenshins has CP ratings for 9 out of 13 episodes. Boston Rob and Redemption Island, 12 out of 14 episodes. Spencer in Cambodia, also 12 out of 14 episodes. You know, we're seeing a lot of their thinking. In Survivor Koh Rang, as you might expect, the three castaways with the most CP ratings are Michelle, Aubrey, and Ty, who all ends up being the final three.
Okay. Okay, I get CP. What about MOR?
All right, so MOR is middle of the road, and this is a character that in an episode that says and does more than what would be considered a UTR edit, which we'll get to in a second, but is kind of lacking in character development. They're not as oversimplified as OTT, but they're not as well-rounded as CP. Their edit in an episode might have some strategic moments, but without support. I mean, they tell us their needs, their wants, their strategies, but they don't tell us why or how those are their needs or wants or strategies.
Yeah.
The easiest way to understand about what MOR is to compare it to CP, because it's kind of hard to point to someone and say that this has been a very MOR person, even though Sophie is actually the most MOR winner that we've ever had, where the majority for episodes were middle of the road. So, for example, I'm looking at the episode from last season from Survivor Cambodia, the episode where Andrew Savage was voted out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at the difference between Jeremy and Kelly Wentworth. By the time the episode was over, Jeremy had a CP and Kelly Wentworth had an MOR. So you wonder, you know, what's the difference between them? And if you look at their confessionals in that episode, Kelly's confessional, she's talking about Sierra, Abby, and I were on the bottom. So I thought that I was screwed. Then out of nowhere, Joe says, hey, we're going to blindside Fishback. And I'm like, great, this is huge. And I have an idol, but I don't want to use it this early in the game if I don't have to. And then later, she finds out that the plan has changed. She says, I thought we were going to blindside Fishback. And the next thing I know, the plan isn't that anymore. So she's just giving us kind of, you know, this is where I am right now. This is what's happening to me. And this is a decision I have to make. But it's not very forward-looking. You know, we're not getting why is she thinking this, because it's very immediate. Whereas Jeremy gets two confessionals where one, he's saying, since day one, Steven's been trying to get Joe out, but if I get rid of Joe, then I don't have him as a shield anymore. And every time Joe wins, it makes his bullseye bigger and bigger. And so the first time Joe loses, he could be going home. And then later, he talks about Savage wants to take out Steven because he's been trying to get rid of Joe. But that would also be a bad move for me because Steven's been with me for 20 days and I've been building trust with him. I want Steven to come with me far into the game. Because once the big guys start going at each other, I want to have all the bullets. So there's a lot of room for interpretation here.
Yeah.
But you can see kind of just from that example how, you know, Kelly's giving us the immediate. She's giving us, I'm on the bottom. I might have to use my idol. They want to vote out Steven. That's great. They don't want to vote out Steven anymore. That's bad. And Jeremy's saying, you know, why wanting to get Joe out is bad for him because of this plan he's been cultivating throughout the entire season. and so on.
In terms of the interpretation, is there a lot of debate at times in the edgic community of somebody saying like, no, this is CP, and somebody else is saying, no, this is MOR? Because it feels like to me as an outsider, I feel like that everybody seems like they're on the same page.
There is. I mean, when you look at a chart, you're only looking at the final product, which is, you know, after they've come to a consensus or after usually what happens on the boards is people will vote at the end of the week for what their ratings are. And then whichever one gets the most is the one that ends up going on the official chart. So people will post what they believe their ratings are, and then people will debate back and forth. You know, let's say in that episode, some people thought that Kelly Wentworth was CP, and then, you know, the MOR people will give their reasoning. The CP people will give their reasoning. They'll try and back it up with examples from previous episodes or for previous seasons. There's just a lot of discussion that goes on, you know, over the course of the days following an episode, as people have watched the episode or they'll rewatch or re-rewatch the episode, looking for these things specifically, you know, and then eventually, you know, everyone just has to vote, and whichever rating gets the most votes is what is the consensus pick for that player for that episode.
And then in terms of like this Kelly versus Jeremy example, if Kelly had phrased her thoughts in the same way that Jeremy did, are you saying that you feel like that the editors wouldn't use a quote which was similar to the Jeremy quote because it would not support her as a non-winner of the game? Or is it more like the chicken or the egg? Kelly didn't win the game because she wasn't thinking about things the same way Jeremy was.
I mean, it could be both. I mean, there's also, I mean, the castaways, when they're out there, they're going to say what they say, you know, and the editors only have so much to work with. They can't create complexity out of nowhere. So if this is what Kelly was giving them in this episode, then this is all they're going to include. And obviously, this was a very big episode for her because she used an idol and she saved herself. So they're going to include what she says. You know, they're not purposely going to necessarily exclude things for her because it might look good for her as a winner candidate. Because by this point in the season, actually, even though the majority of Edric had settled on Jeremy as the winner, by this point, Kelly and Spencer were very close behind. So there were Kelly Wentworth supporters that believed that this supported her as a winner. There's always a lot of argument going on and a lot of everyone trying to justify how they see the clues that the editors are giving us.
Yeah.
You could see as we are going through this that it really isn't, it's not math. You know, it's not a very A plus B equals C kind of thing. It's a lot of interpretation.
The only thing that I have a hard time with fully understanding this is if Kelly had a great confessional, which ended up being more CP than MOR, I just can't believe the editors wouldn't use it if she had a great line or two, or if all of her confessionals were sort of phrased differently.
I don't think they would exclude it either. I think that they are trying to create a compelling narrative. And if she is giving a lot of complex confessionals, they're going to include it. I mean, this season is the perfect example. You know, so many times Aubrey had very complex, very strategic, very, you know, forward-looking, backward-looking confessionals that also had some really good content and snappy lines. You know, so of course they're going to include them, even though she doesn't win, because they're trying to create a compelling story. And the point of Edric is looking through everything from the very beginning with a very critical eye as to why they're including some things and not including others. And as we go through, once we get to really talking about Shell, you'll see why, you know, Edric kind of came to the conclusion it did about Michelle so early in the season.
Yeah, the tipping point of Edric.
Exactly.
All right, what about under the radar, the UTRs?
Someone who's under the radar is in an episode, is edited to be either underutilized or deliberately hidden. And the trick is to figuring out which. In story terms, they might have a role in the story, but they're being kept out of focus. You know, they receive little or no significant game relevant development, or sometimes someone who's UTR will be someone who the only confessionals that they give in an episode are really just kind of narrating the game, you know, talking about we're building the shelter, you know, talking about, you know, our alliance wants to vote out X person. But if you don't see anything else from them the rest of the episode, that'll be somebody who's given an under the radar rating. The best example from this season of the kind of run of the mill underutilized UTR rating would be Michelle and Julia in episodes 2, 3, and 4. Mm-hmm. You know, this is when the Beauty Tribe was obviously not going to tribal council. They were not being shown a lot. When they were being shown, you know, most of the footage was being devoted to Ty and Caleb, and Michelle and Julia were kind of just there. You know, they said one or two things, but that was it. So they get the kind of underutilized typical UTR edit. Somebody who on the other side got a UTR edit, but over the course of the season, we realized that they were being deliberately hidden, was Natalie Anderson in the episode of San Juan del Sur when Jeremy gets voted out. Mm-hmm. She was one of the least visible players that episode, and she was the only one whose edit warranted a UTR rating. Everybody else was more complex. And when we wanted to know why, as the course of the season progressed, we figured the editors wanted to shield her from looking oblivious about Jeremy getting blindsided, which set up the remainder of her game. Mm-hmm. Something Edgic has learned over the past 32 seasons is that the editors rarely want to have their winner look stupid, you know, or completely out of the loop, or silly, or flat out wrong, you know. But they can't change what happened. You know, obviously, what happened in that episode is Jeremy gets voted out. Are they going to show Natalie, who ends up being their winner, having confessionals saying, Jeremy's not going anywhere, we're in a great position, you know, nothing's going wrong, because then it looks like the rug gets pulled out from under her. So to protect the winner, they don't show her as much in this episode. They kind of show everything happening around her, and that then supports the story of her kind of emerging from her cocoon after Jeremy gets voted out and then dominating the rest of the season.
I mean, that definitely makes sense to me. I'm trying to think of what is the worst a winner ever looked in terms of making a mistake. Can you think of something where a winner was just completely caught flat-footed?
I need a second.
Okay. I mean, I feel like the one that jumps out to me, and just from a personal standpoint, is Heidi and Jenna got left pretty flat-footed when Alex got voted out in the Amazon.
Yeah, that's probably a very good example. And unlike Natalie, you know, who was hidden from Jeremy being blindsided, you know, we didn't get that from Jenna. You know, she wasn't hidden that episode. You know, she was acting like, you know, they were showing her acting as if everything was going to be fine. Mm-hmm. And her and Heidi and you and Alex were going to go all the way to the end. Right. And then surprise, actually, that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. So that's actually a very good example.
I'm sure there's other ones that people can let us know in the comments, but you're right. You know, I'm struggling to come up with the times that winners got embarrassingly were on the wrong end of the vote. And not like with a hidden immunity idol or something like that.
Yeah, they usually won't show that. And one thing to note before I move on from Under the Radar is that getting some Under the Radar episodes, or having some episodes where you're low visibility, does not mean that that person is losing. Mm-hmm. We very rarely see a winner who does not have some episodes where they're kind of in the background. I remember in whatever episode this season that you had Aris on the podcast, and he had mentioned Edgic, and he had said that he didn't think that Michelle and Julia had a shot at winning because we hadn't really seen much of them.
It was after the fourth episode. It was after the Caleb medevac.
We didn't see much of them, but obviously, you know, we didn't see a lot of Michelle, but it doesn't mean she was losing, because there is some, you know, when you look at the whole picture, there's obviously an explanation for all of that. Every winner will have some where they're in the background. Some players will never have an Under the Radar episode. Famously, Edgic's biggest failure as far as predicting a winner is Tony.
Yes.
Over the course of the season, Edgic as a community thought that Sarah was winning, and Cass and LJ and Trish and Spencer and Wu. You know, those were all top picks throughout the course of the season because everyone thought, you know, that Tony's edit was too big. You know, we were seeing way too much of him. He was all over the place. There had to be some way that he was going to flame out at some point. But, you know, he kind of carved his own path through the season, both game-wise and editorially. So, you know, even though he was never in the background, you know, he still ended up being the winner.
I've said it once, I'll say it again. Tony Vlachos is a unicorn. He is a once-in-a-lifetime Survivor player.
He absolutely is.
Well, maybe not once in a lifetime. But, you know, Tony, they broke the mold when they made Tony.
Yes. The other example of somebody who never had an under-the-radar episode would be Boston Robin in Redemption Island. Mm-hmm. And kind of for the same reason, for a big portion of that season, Etchick had pegged Andrea as the winner. Mm-hmm. And not Rob, and for a very similar reason that we're seeing too much of Rob. He's everywhere. You know, how could he possibly be the winner if he's always constantly in our faces? Because sometimes Edgic will second guess itself and say, well, this person is too obvious. You know, there's no right. way they could be the winner. And that's the case with Rob and with Tony, but you know, in both cases, they were incorrect.
Well, that's actually a really great point, because I was thinking about this the other day, where when we podcast about Survivor Redemption Island, I remember the whole way through, and I think even memorably, I think I had Stephen Fishback on the podcast when we got down to like the final five or the final six. And we had done a podcast with him earlier in the season. He was on with Courtney talking about an episode. You know, Courtney had played with Rob in Heroes vs. Villains. And then we did a podcast with Jess Steven later on in the season. And this was pre-Know-It-Alls, where we used to have, you know, Steven do a recap every season. And Steven was like, no, that Boston Rob will win. He's the only person that can win. And I just remember saying, like, Steven, it's so obvious. It's too obvious. And, you know, this is coming off of where, you know, in my day of, you know, following all this stuff very closely, like the first time around, I feel like you wouldn't have a winner that was so obvious the whole way through, outside of maybe like, you know, maybe Tom Westman might be the best example of that. And even he had to go sort of like, you know, him and Ian, it was going to be one of those two. But there was never anybody that was as obvious as of a winner as that. And I felt like Rob tells us like halfway through, I want to go to the final three with Philip and Natalie. And then that's actually what he does. And I remember thinking at that time in Survivor 22, this is unprecedented that somebody told us what their plan was. It never got deviated. It never got blown up. And that's exactly how it went. And he won.
Yes, that's very rare. Thinking about earlier examples, you know, I'm thinking about Todd in China, where they show him and Amanda making an alliance on day one. And Todd talking about, now, I want to go to the end with Amanda. And it's, you know, it's very rare, you know, that you'll see something like that and then it actually comes true. Rob was one of those ones where he, you know, he broke the mold.
But is that a shift that Edgic has seen over the years, where there was less of this person who is like the favorite to win throughout most of it, who ends up winning?
It really depends on the season, because there were a couple seasons in the middle. I'm thinking about Aris and Yule and Earl and Todd, where they're very big from the beginning and they kind of remain a large presence throughout. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like you start to wonder, is this edit too good maybe?
Yeah.
That they're being shown so prominently and they're so strategic and everything seems to be going their way and you are waiting for the other shoe to drop on them, but it never does and they end up winning. It depends.
It's a good point. In the case of Rob in Redemption Island, I feel like that he was the only person that you probably could have imagined after a certain point. Whereas I feel like that Yule, there was the Ozzy threat. And with Tom, there was the Ian threat. Even with Todd, I guess you could say, okay, it could still be Amanda. So I feel like in all those other seasons, there was at least one other person that you could point to that was a threat to take it, where I guess that the Boston Rob thing in Redemption Island was so unusual because there was nobody else that you could really sort of imagine as being like, it was people like Matt Elrod, like, oh, maybe he'll come back from Redemption Island and win.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and for every time you have a Boston Rob kind of edit, you also have a season like Gabon, where kind of by happenstance, the winner ends up being Bob Crowley.
Because there's no good players in the entire
season?
Because
there's no good players in the entire season, or there's no good players left. You know, looking at the chart right now in front of me for Gabon, until he got voted out, Edric thought that Marcus was winning. Because coming off of seasons like Cook Islands, like Fiji, like China, where you kind of have this kind of dominating male strategist, and they're getting all these great strategic confessionals, everyone assumed that Marcus was kind of just following in that mold, and then he ends up getting voted out, and then Edric was shifted to Kenny, and thought, well, you know, Marcus is gone, Kenny's being shown being strategic, maybe it's Kenny, and then it turned out to not be Kenny, and then it's just... he gets voted out, and then everybody's kind of up in the air.
Yeah.
You know, when you're left with Maddie, Sugar, Susie, and Bob, and, you know, it ends up...
a murderer's row of Survivor talent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Survivor legends casting right from the merged tribe.
Mount Rushmore of Survivor. All right. I don't want to get too far down the Gabon rabbit hole. Is there anything else on UTR, or do you want to talk about the INV?
Yeah, we can move on to Invisible. So this is a character in an episode is edited to be either totally irrelevant or insignificant to any of the stories. There's a little bit of debate how strict an invisible player has to be. Some people stick by the hard and fast rule that to be invisible, a character has to say absolutely nothing over the course of an episode. And there are some people that will give kind of some leeway. You know, if they say a thing or two, you know, if it's off camera or if they're saying something, you know, in a challenge, then they'll bump them up to UTR. But for some people, you know, if they don't say anything, then, you know, they're invisible. Some examples of this, you know, the most famous probably is Tina Wesson in episode one of Survivor Australian Outback.
Mm-hmm.
As kind of the reaction to Survivor Borneo, where in the first episode, Richard Hatch is like, just sign me up and give me $1 million, and included it. And he was the only person to say that. And then he ended up being the winner. And so, you know, the question kind of remains, you know, was this on purpose that every other of the 15 people in Outback said something in that first episode, but Tina was the only one who didn't?
I don't know. I'm still of the mind of, I just don't think she said anything great. I feel like that you had a lot of different things to talk about. I think it's only a 1 hour episode, whereas a lot of times we have the 90 minute premiere. I feel like if she would have had something, I feel like they would have put it in there.
Yeah, I would hope so. Some fun facts about Invisible. Episode 2 of Samoa has the unfortunate distinction of having the record for the most number of invisible castaways in a single episode at 7. 7 of the 19 people in episode 2 of Samoa said nothing.
Don't you see, Zach? That's what I do. I make people invisible.
Yes, exactly.
You can't see me because I made you invisible. Sorry.
Yeah, that's fine. Not Mike Barassi. Not He's Russell Hands.
Not that mean motor scooter.
The real go-getter.
Yeah. No, we're going to take him downtown to Chinatown, man.
We did not hear that episode from Russell Swan, from Eric Cardona, Kelly Sharbaugh, John Fincher, Dave Ball, Brett Clouser. And do you have a guess for the seventh one?
The seventh person that we don't hear from, Mick.
No, the eventual winner of Survivor Samoa.
It was too easy.
Anything from her that episode.
Yeah.
Also, another fun fact is Cagayan is the only season to have zero invisible contestants over the course of the entire season.
But now, did the Russell Hance era also mark a shift? I changed the game. Of where you're going to have people who are going to really just be some sort of black hole of confessionals, like that one person is going to start getting all the screen time, and there's going to be more and more people that are going to be more invisible. Like there's going to be like maybe like 4 or 5 people in a season, just like, forget about those people, as opposed to maybe trying to space it out more in the earlier seasons.
It's partly that, but it's also partly, you know, these seasons in the teens with 20 new players.
So it's the player count more so.
Exactly.
Than,
I mean,
got it.
Yeah. For in large part, you know, if you look back at, you know, there are many episodes in Cook Islands, where there are four or five invisible people in an episode. Fiji, there's four or five people invisible in an episode. You know, the Lilianas of the world,
yes,
you know, who we're never going to hear anything from. I think it's more just, it's more an issue of that than, because we, going forward, you know, we have like Redemption Island, when there are, that's the same thing there. You know, when you have people like Rob and Philip who are kind of sucking up the airtime, you're going to get invisible people. In the premiere, we didn't hear anything from Krista, from Julie, from Steve, or Grant. And episode 2 of season 23, when it's all about Coach and it's all about Brandon Hance and it's all about Christine, you know, we don't hear from Papa Bear, from Dawn, from Whitney, or from Rancher Rick. You know, so it really just depends on the season. If they have a big character who they want to devote a lot of time to, then, you know, what's going to follow from that is that there are going to be people who get left by the wayside.
So, Under the Radar and Invisible, very close cousins.
Very close, yes. It's just that for some people, invisible means you say absolutely nothing. For some people, they'll let them get, you know, a word or two.
So we've talked about the visibility and we've talked about the ratings, but that's only two parts of the Edgic puzzle, right?
It is. So the final part then is tone, which is kind of the last part of the score. And this one is tricky because while everyone in every episode will have a rating and everyone in every episode will have visibility, not everyone will have a tone. Tone is optional.
Okay.
Most contestants in a given episode won't be assigned a tone, and they'll be considered neutral or they'll be considered toneless. And when we're looking whether to assign tone to a castaway, what people who do Edgic are looking for is manipulation by the editors as to how someone is being portrayed. Are they trying to show a contestant in a positive light, or are they trying to show them in a negative light? You know, either, you know, on the positive side through heroic music or positive comments from other players, or on the negative side, are they getting Dodo music? Are they being shown as being lazy? Are they looking villainous? That's what we look for.
Okay, so what are the levels of tone?
As a general overview, there is P, which is positive, PP is super positive, N is negative.
Why isn't it SP?
I don't know.
Okay.
I think it's just really positive, you get more P's.
Yay, positive.
Really negative, you get more N's. So starting with P, which is positive. So this is someone who's, they're given this rating if there's significant evidence that the edit is being manipulated in a positive direction, either through showing other contestants or Jeff speaking about them in a positive way or portraying the character sympathetically. Some examples of this, think about Jenny in the premiere of Survivor Ko Rong. You know, they're showing her toughing it out through this bug situation. And everyone in the Braun tribe is saying, you know, how terrible this is and how strong she is for pushing through it.
See, that doesn't ring true to me because I feel like that she had a bug in her ear. Don't you have to show that no matter what? And what are they going to say? Like, she's being kind of a baby about being hugging. I mean, and she gets voted out the next episode.
Exactly. But I mean, it's just how are they showing? It's just how are they showing her? I mean, what the rating is for a particular episode, you know, that rating is assigned that episode, and okay, the discussion of that rating is closed before the next episode happens. So every episode is looked at in a bubble.
Okay.
And looking at the bubble of a Survivor Ko Rong premiere, they're showing Jenny positively, so she's going to be given positive tone. Okay. Another example is Jeremy in the second episode of Second Chance. This is when they show him that he's walked off after Andrew Savage tells the story about his wife.
Yes.
And he is emotional. He's crying to the camera. He's talking about Val. He's talking about Val being pregnant. You know, this is all very positive. Ty Trang, through most of the pre-merge, was given positive tone. He's shown as very positive. Caleb's medevac, Caleb was shown positively. Joe's medevac, Joe was shown positively. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, if you're getting medevaced, you're going to be shown positively.
Right. So if you could just not get medevaced, your winner chances would go sky high.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, infinitely
higher. I'm okay.
Infinitely higher. Then we move from P into PP, which is super positive.
Yeah.
So this is someone who is so unbelievably and overtly positive that they deserve special recognition. They get heroic soaring music. Other people may refer to them in terms that make them seem heroic or saintly.
Wait, hold on. So Caleb, when he got medevac, didn't even get to PP?
He You're not getting to pee for healing.
What did he have to do?
He got pee. I don't know. He only got pee. Some PP examples. Jenna Maraska quitting All Stars. Brenda Lowe in the episode of Karamoan where she was booted when she helped Dawn find her teeth. And you know, she's almost a saint. The most sympathetic medevac actually was Jonathan Penner from Micronesia.
Yes.
And he, says, he got a PP that episode.
It's bad luck, Johnny. I had this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had this one.
You know, wait, but can you get a P or a PP when you don't get voted out or medevaced from the game?
Yes, you can.
Okay. But it's tough.
It's tough. And I mean, people get, you know, they get CPP all the time. You know, Jeremy in that second episode of Cambodia was CPP because he was still being strategic. He was telling the audience, you know, I'm feeling really emotional because I left Val at home and she's pregnant, but he's also talking about, you know, why he can't let anyone in the game know that Val is pregnant, because what would it mean for him and that he'd be voted out. Most of the time, a PP is reserved for a character who also gets OTT. So they're usually together, you know, OTT, PP. The most recent example of that not happening is actually Sierra in Blood versus Water, in the episode where she voted out Laura Moret. She got a CPPP.
Yeah.
So CP because she's being strategic, and PP just because she's being shown as so sympathetic because she's struggling with, I want to play with my mom. I don't want to vote my mom out. She gets the CPPP.
Okay. The rare CPPP.
Very rare CPPP.
Sierra.
The only other time I think there was a CPPP was Stephanie got it in an episode of Palau.
Okay.
But the most recent was Sierra.
Okay.
And then we move from positive into negative. A contestant is giving this rating if there's significant evidence that the edit is manipulated in a negative direction. It could be showing the other contestants or Jeff speaking about them in a negative way, or portraying them as dopey or cruel or annoying or mean. Some examples of this, no offense to him, but Steven in the premiere of Cambodia, the Dodo music where he's wrestling with the tree branch.
Yes.
He gets some negative comments from his other tribe mates saying that he's looking for an idol.
Mm-hmm.
So this kind of reflects negatively on him.
He's always PP to me.
He's always PP. Think of Abby Maria in the premiere of Cambodia.
Yes.
She's shown as being totally insufferable about her bracelet.
Yes.
Shireen and Max in the swap episode of Worlds Apart, they're shown as totally alienating themselves from their tribe.
Mm-hmm.
They're only talking about game. You know, you get the confessional from Jen Brown about Max talking about the October 13th, you know, talking about the signs of Survivor winners.
Very end.
Sometimes you can get negative tone, even if you specifically are not doing anything, but it's what other people are saying about you. The perfect example of this from this season was episode 6 of Koh Rong. This is after the swap. This is where Debbie says Jason is lazy. And immediately the edit jump cuts to showing Jason asleep in the shelter. Things like that. She says, I'm lazy. It's being supported by the editors immediately with footage of Jason being lazy. You know, that could earn you an N for an episode.
Okay.
Even if you're not doing anything on your own.
And what's the difference between N and NN?
NN is where a character
notably negative.
It's notably negative. So vile it deserves special recognition. For example, Will Sims in the bullying episode of Worlds Apart. You know, he is just shown as being treating Shireen absolutely despicably, seemingly for no reason. Russell Hance in the premiere of Samoa, where he is burning socks and pouring out water and lying about his dog dying in Hurricane Katrina.
There's not enough N's for me. I make all the N's. I'm triple N.
There really aren't. Some other ones are the
episode. You can't spell Hance without double N's.
Probably can't.
I think technically you can. But.
Yeah, I think you only need one N.
You can't say Hance without lots of N's.
Yeah. You need two N's for Brandon Hance, though.
Yes.
Brandon Hance did get a double N in Karamoan in the episode where he was pulled. Nayanka when she quit in Nicaragua, and she knew she was quitting, but she took the reward anyway.
Yeah.
Colton gets it twice. He got it once during the episode of One World where they voted out Bill, where they volunteered to go to tribal council. He got it again in the episode where he quit Blood versus Water.
Did anybody hit double N in Ko Rong?
No.
Wow. Not
only single N's.
Yeah.
Not Scott in episode 4, where he's being a bully to Alicia. That's just a single N.
Boy.
You know, because it's not to the level of, you're comparing to, Will in, yeah. in World's Heart.
The most notorious Survivor moments in history.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay.
Notoriously negative.
Yes, notoriously negative. And unlike PP, where sometimes it's been matched with things other than OTT, NN has only ever been with an OTT character. Okay. You're only over the top, super negative, super villain kind of thing.
Okay.
The closest example that some people would argue is a CPNN is Johnny Fairplay in the Grandma Lie episode of Pearl Islands, where that's a terrible thing for him to be lying about, but he, at the same time, he's giving the audience his reasoning for why he's doing this.
Yeah.
It's not just someone being evil for the sake of being evil.
I also am very familiar with OTTNN. I have a lot of commenters who are OTTNN.
I feel like most internet commenters are OTTNN.
I think that's going to be the response to the most OTTNN commenters I have.
From now on, you can just say. Well,
I do have a lot of CPP, even some CPPP commenters.
I encourage all commenters to be a little more PP and a little.
Yeah, please. A little more PP in my comments. Thank you.
And then the final tone is M for mixed. This is used when the show is giving us mixed signals about a character. So this is different than
like
toneless.
Mixed trimming?
Yes, exactly. This is different than toneless. Toneless is what you get when you're just a regular, it's just a straightforward edit. But mixed is when you're getting edited, manipulated positivity and manipulated negativity. So like Mike Holloway in the auction episode of Worlds Apart, he's getting positive commentary from Shireen because he's coming to her rescue and he's looking like the hero, but he's also getting negativity for everything with the auction.
Mm-hmm.
Aubrey in the Survivor Ko Rong premiere, she's getting the negativity of her meltdown, but she's getting the positivity of her recovery and her performance in the immunity challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Ty in episode 9, after Nick was voted out, where he's shown as being positive because he's being torn about which way he wants to go, but then he's also shown negatively because he gets up in the middle of the night and he douses the fire.
Yeah.
Now, so we get a little bit of both from them.
Okay.
So overall, what these ratings mean, because obviously it's been like the largest portion of the discussion so far, and it's not a numbers-driven system. But the ratings are just used as an aid to quantify what is unquantifiable, which is the story that is being told to us by the editors. And they're just used to help us put into perspective some trends that are emerging and the relations between and among the edits of other players.
Okay, so then now that we have these three parts of the whole, we combine visibility plus the rating plus the tone, and then we have what?
And then we have a contestant's rating for that particular episode. And you do that for every contestant, for every episode, for the entire season.
Okay, so then like we go through and we have our MOR2s and our OTTN4s and our OTTP3s. And then what is there sort of like, is there a cutoff where, they hit OTTN3, so they're out?
Not necessarily. I mean, there is... Edric is, it's, we don't have a magic formula and we never will. This is a quote that I have stolen from Pia, who's another RHAP patron who, yes, I talk a lot about Edric about. There is,
I might have to start calling it RHAPP.
I hope so.
Yes.
There's no magic formula. And every time we think that there's a rule, somebody comes along and breaks the rule. We thought with Tony, there's no way that someone who is being shown this prominently and in some cases this negatively is going to win. And then they come along and do it.
That's why he's toneless Vlachos.
Exactly. I mean, five episodes in a row in Kaguyan, in episode 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, he got ends for every single one. You know, he's being shown as erratic. He's being shown as, you know, all over the place. You know, he's talking to Cass and Llama, but he's still the winner. So we don't try to make hard and fast rules. The chart is used as an aid. You know, it's used to kind of guide the discussion over the course of a season. There's no magic formula. There's no, you know, this person got this many CPs, so they must be the winner. It just depends on the story. Edgic, like editing, is an art. It's not a science.
So now, this season in particular, let's talk about the tipping point of Edgic and get into why was it this season that things just became either abundantly clear, or was it that Edgic just became abundantly popular at this point?
I mean, I certainly think it's a combination of a lot of things, and chief among them is the fact that there's just a lot more online discussion. You know, we have Survivor Reddit, Survivor Sucks continues. You know, we have RHAP, we have all sorts of other podcasts. So everyone's just kind of finding new ways to talk about the episode.
There's more of a cross-pollination of the different pockets of Survivor talk.
Exactly. Edgic used to be confined to one particular thread on Survivor Sucks. You know, at one point, a small group of those Edgic people broke off and formed a new site called Unspoiled Edgicers Unite, because there was some fear around Survivor Philippines of people being spoiled and coming to Edgic and then talking about it like they knew who the winner was and then trying to appear smart.
Well, can we talk about that a little bit? Because I feel like that's the biggest concern that I think a lot of people have who are sort of Edgic resistant, where it's like, fingers in the ears, I don't want to talk about this, because that there's a concern, I feel like, that people say like, okay, well, you know what happened, and now you've made up this sort of like alchemy to say what your spoilers are going to be.
My defense to that, or defense against that, is just, I don't know anyone who would go through the amount of work that Edgic involves over the course of a season, where it's, you know, paragraphs upon paragraphs of discussion and, you know, and watching the episode and such, you know, just so you can kind of backpedal your way to create the winner, just knowing a spoiler so that you can impress a few anonymous people on the internet. I mean, I personally, I've never been spoiled. You know, I don't seek out spoilers, but I have participated in Edgic. You know, I certainly know many people who are exactly the same. I mean, there's always going to try to be people who are spoiled, who will try to ruin it for other people, but I don't think it's fair to blame Edgic just because I think some people, you know, everybody watches Survivor differently. The Edgic people watch it with a very critical eye on the edit, and we have learned to pick up on a lot of things that a lot of people don't. And I think that some of the Edgic resistant people just may not necessarily look at the edit the way that the Edgic people do. And if they don't understand it, then they may assume Edgic people must know something that they don't know about how the season turned out.
What would happen in the Edgic community if it was found out that somebody knew spoilers and then were trying to use Edgic to give away their spoilers?
I mean, it would certainly be frowned upon. I mean, there are...
No, we got to do better than that. They need to get a tattoo on their forehead that says OTTNN.
Yes.
Five.
OTTNN 5. Edgic spoiler. Yes.
Yes.
LTT triple N. Edgic ruiner.
Be excommunicated.
Exactly. But you never know. They make
Edgic communicated.
Edgic communicated.
Exactly. That's right. Get them out of here.
So
enough of
that. I mean, people are going to try to spoil their, you know, that's what they're going to do. I don't think that it's as much of an issue in the Edgic community. A lot of people, you know, if people who know spoilers, they're going to do things like bomb, you know, somebody's Periscope. Or, you know, the comments maybe on Rob's website.
How dare they? No,
or
no.
YouTube commentary.
Zero tolerance. Zero tolerance.
So,
but okay, I mean, so I think that the reason why this comes up, though, is because where you have this season where people in the Edgic community felt very strongly, Michelle's the winner. And so if you're somebody who is not educated in what's going on with this. It feels exactly the same as somebody who's telling you, oh, here's the spoiler, Michelle is going to win.
Yes. I think that maybe some people were a bit overzealous.
OTT?
Yeah, a little OTT in their treatment of what they, their conclusion about Edgic. You know, there were, there's been a big backlash, especially in the Survivor Reddit, to the point where from now on, all Edgic discussion must be tagged like a spoiler.
Mm-hmm.
Because there would be people who are trying to have a perfectly reasonable discussion throughout the course of the season of Aubrey versus Sydney versus Michelle versus Ty about their different games and, you know, what that could potentially mean going forward. And then somebody would come in and they would say, Edgic says Michelle wins. This discussion is over. You know, and it's kind of just ruining other people's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Edgic is like somebody who wants to try to figure out like the ending of a mystery novel before the reveal, or somebody who, you know, is trying to figure out the twist, like say in The Sixth Sense. And, you know, it's like somebody sitting next to you in the movie theater going, you know, nobody's talked to Bruce Willis. He's dead. He's a ghost. Nobody sees him, kind of thing. And it's not fun for people who don't want to be subjected to that. They want to watch the episode as they want to watch the episode, and they don't want somebody whispering in their ear, oh, you see what Michelle said there? Oh, she's definitely winning. See what Michelle did right there? She's definitely winning. See what Aubrey did there? She's not winning. You know, and it ruins the fun for them.
Okay, well, let's talk specifically about Survivor Co Wrong. And could you talk about some of the things that Edgic saw in terms of the season that led Edgic to see Michelle as the winner from an early point this season?
Just a little bit of background. You know, when someone is analyzing Edgic and is looking in an episode, what I kind of term it as is that you are looking at the totality of the circumstances. You are looking at everything that happens from episode 1 to episode 14. You know, in a particular episode, you're looking at what happened before, at what could happen after. You know, and we want to know, we want to try and figure out what is the story the editors are telling. This kind of started from the very beginning. Now, in episode 1, we look at what are these characters' introductions to the audience. And we look at what's Michelle's introduction to us. She talks about being a bartender. She talks about you learn that certain personality types want certain things. So she is shown as looking at the other people on her tribe. She's shown as evaluating what they may want from her or what she may want from them, and about what she wants going forward. And she talks about, you know, finding her way into the alliance of three girls. So in that first episode, we got some forward-looking content from her. We got some sense of her game long-term. A very important thing that I think a lot of people who don't follow Edgic maybe don't look at as closely as Edgic people do is the previously on Survivor. The recap can kind of be a gold mine for edit analysis. And unlike many other shows, which just kind of provide a summary of what happened previously, the previously on Survivor is carefully curated and it's narrated by Jeff and is often a huge source of manipulation. Biggest manipulation that we got in the recap this season that pointed to Michelle being the winner is how much focus was given to the Beauty Girls Alliance in the recap.
Mm-hmm.
In episode 2, the recap, Jeff says, at the Beauty Tribe, the women thought they could use Ty. In episode 3, he says, at the Beauty Tribe, the Women's Alliance was growing stronger. And they show Michelle confessional saying, the Girls Alliance seems really natural to me. In episode 4, at the Beauty Tribe, the women found safety in each other. Anna in confessional saying, the three girls were pretty tight. In episode 5, since day 1, the game has been a fight and nothing has come easy. Jeff says alliances were made, and the only alliance that was featured in that recap was the Beauty Girls Alliance.
Now, how does that factor into, you know, these either ratings or visibility or tone? Does that count as a confessional if Michelle says something in the recap?
If she says it in the recap, no, it does not count as a confessional. It's the story proper, you know, from the first second of a cold open to the second that Jeff snuffs the torch out. So that also means that, you know, obviously a contestant's final words don't count as a confessional. Voting confessionals don't count as confessionals. So if someone is shown giving a confessional while they cast their vote, that doesn't count.
So how does that stuff get accounted for? Like, for instance, if somebody is like especially nasty in their voting confessional or something like that, or what you're talking about with Michelle in the previously on, where does that factor into the system?
It doesn't factor into the chart itself. It's just something, like I said, totality of the circumstances. We use all of the tools that we have available to us to kind of give an interpretation of where the edit's going. Chances are if someone is really negative in their voting confessional, then they've probably been shown as being negative early in the episode. You know, if they're really trying to stick it to somebody when they're voting them out, that usually doesn't come out of nowhere.
Okay, so it's sort of confirming what you're already seeing.
Yes. Okay. So sometimes the recap will emphasize a castaway's poor play. This is kind of one of the biggest knocks against Aubrey. Against her edit in the recap of the merge episode, we re-emphasized Aubrey's confessional, talking about no matter what I do, it's going to blow back and bite me in the ass. When they're showing her being uncertain, and sometimes a recap can be used to de-emphasize a player's contribution by not featuring them in the recap.
Mm-hmm.
In the recap for the episode after Nick was voted out. I mean, the Nick vote out was kind of a, in the episode itself, you know, it was shown as kind of the women coming together. It was Aubrey talking to Sydney. You know, it was them talking to, you know, can we get the beauty girls? In the recap of the next episode, the recap made it all about Sydney and they didn't talk about Aubrey at all.
Right.
They said Sydney got tired of the men controlling the game. So she rallied the women in order to take out the men. And at Tribal Council, Ty made a big mistake, which was him talking about the super idol. But for Sydney, everything fell into place when the women sent Nick to the jury. So yeah, the recap was all about Sydney. It didn't talk about Aubrey. If Aubrey was the winner, she would have been emphasized more in that recap.
Mm-hmm.
Because they want to show, if the winner is making moves, then the editors want to show the winner making moves.
Why did they show Sydney making the moves?
That's a question I can't answer.
Okay.
There's not an Edgic answer to every question.
Okay.
You know, I mean, Edgic is not, you know,
it's not a religion.
It's not a religion. Its purpose is to try to pick the winner. It's not its purpose to pick who's a losing finalist, who comes in third, who comes in fourth. You know, that's not what its job is.
Because there was talk during the season that, you know, Steven had said, and I saw a lot of people saying in different places on Reddit, Dom and Colin were saying Jason is a losing finalist. So is there Edgic that points to that, or is that just more sort of like a look and feel sort of, okay, this guy seems like a losing finalist?
No, that's just a look and feel thing. I mean, Edgic is not, you know, it's not designed to pick out losing finalists. It's just, that's how people were interpreting the edit, because yes, we were given, and we were shown that Jason was kind of a bully or that he was being negative, but then we were also shown positive things about him, about his family, and particularly his daughter. And people assumed, based on that, we were probably going to see him at the end because he was going to be talking about his daughter in the final tribal council. But that ended up being incorrect.
That was too much. People were living in Cambodia.
Yes. Before we get specifically into talking about how we knew Michelle was going to win, I want to talk about a couple things that Edgic is not looking for over the course of the season. Some of the traps that people may fall into. One of the biggest is a sudden spike in visibility.
Yeah.
For example, I remember people saying after the merge episode of Survivor Ko-Rong that Nick, in that episode, he got a lot of strategic confessionals. He was saying a lot of things. He looked like that he was the, you know, the main character of the merge episode. And I remember the discussion that you and Steven were having on the Know-It-Alls, where you were saying that maybe this is looking good for Nick going forward. And Steven was saying, I think he's going to be voted out in the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
And because Steven, you know, was doing kind of the Edgic thing of we're looking backwards and we're seeing, where has Nick been for the entire pre-merge? And the answer is pretty much nowhere. He was very under-edited. So when we suddenly see him at the merge and he goes from, you know, getting ones and twos for visibility to all of a sudden he's now at a five, you know, it's like, well, you start to question that about why are we getting this all of a sudden? If he was going to be such a big character going forward and very important to the strategy, why didn't we see that earlier?
But that being said, I do feel like that the Beauty Tribe was a bit of a blip on the radar screen because they never went to Tribal Council. And then you have that one really weird episode where Caleb gets medevaced. Like, who knows if we would have seen more of them had they been to a Tribal Council. I mean, in addition to Nick, we have Michelle and Julia also on that tribe who did not get a lot of screen time. And whereas Michelle sort of arced into the person that we thought was going to be the winner, I mean, Nick, at that point in time, I don't think that that would have been totally out of the realm of possibility for him to go on a somewhat similar trajectory, no?
Maybe in certain circumstances, but looking back, we didn't get much from him in the premiere.
Yeah.
You know, we got the episode, you know, of, I mean, we got the confessional where he, yeah, sure, he says 39 days and $1 million in my pocket at the end. And some people, you know, there might be a ringing bell saying, oh, winner quote, but then in the next episode, he disappeared completely.
Yeah.
Nick was the only person the entire season to ever get rated as invisible.
So does that take him completely off the map when he gets an INV1? Because he got an INV1, but Michelle had UTR2 and UTR1 and UTR1, those three episodes that follow the premiere.
Yes, but the ratings themselves are not gospel. Because yes, she was given low visibility, but the recap every episode was saying the Beauty Girls Alliance, Michelle and Anna and Julia together. So the editors were reminding us that these women are here, these women are strategizing, these women have formed an alliance. And why that ultimately became important to the conclusion that Michelle was going to win was that this alliance ended up having absolutely no impact on the game.
Mm-hmm.
They never went to Tribal Council together. They never voted together. They never talked about it again, you know, after Anna goes out, really, because they don't really ever show too much of Michelle and Julia strategizing together. Because when Julia comes back and they merge, she's more on the Scott, Jason, Ty side, and Michelle is with Sydney and Debbie and Aubrey. So, like I said, you know, it's the total circumstances, it's everything together, as opposed to just, you know, what the ratings are. Because there have been winners who have had invisible episodes. Tina was one of them. Natalie White was one of them. Amber and All Stars. We've had invisible winners before. I think Fabio may have been in one episode also. So it does happen. Yes, he was. So it does happen, but it's just, it's comparing the circumstances of what's going on in a particular season.
Okay.
So talking about Michelle specifically, this is kind of what we've been leading up to. This is also kind of where the logic portion of Edgic comes in when we're looking back at what has been shown to us previously in previous seasons. So on the one hand, over past seasons of Survivor, we look at people who have Michelle's character type. We've seen them many times, you know, the young, pretty girl. You look at Sierra Dawn Thomas from Worlds Apart. Fan favorite Sierra Dawn Thomas. Other fan favorite, Haley Ford. Kelly Wentworth 1.0. Jacqueline Schultz from San Wendell Sur. Jeffra, Katie Collins, Whitney Duncan, Natalie Bolton. You know, the inoffensive, young, pretty girl. So we know how that character type is usually edited, and none of them have won. So we know how those characters are edited when they don't win. And they have one thing in common, that they're often not shown when it's not absolutely necessary to show them in the context of a given episode.
Okay.
So like Natalie Bolton, she is UTR1 or invisible for about 9-10 episodes. And then she jumps to OTT and N5 in the episode when she's talking about wanting to like rip out Prince Siska's heart and floss with the jugular.
Yeah. People love it.
We don't see her when she's not absolutely necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Also, and then on the other hand, in the context of this season, we see from the start that we have a lot of compelling narrators. We have Aubrey, Sydney, Jason, Scott, Anna, Debbie, Ty, Nick. Each of them we know will have good, interesting confessionals. They'll be concise, to the point. We'll get entertaining sound bites from them. And then here comes Michelle. Edgic's conclusion about Michelle. She was only one of two castaways to not go to tribal council pre-merge. And the other one, who's Nick, was given a pretty miserable edit, especially for a handsome alpha male. Usually they get featured more heavily. She was on an original tribe in a three-tribe season that didn't go to tribal council, and that tribe's very limited airtime was dominated by Ty and Caleb. Mm-hmm. You know, were very positively toned. You know, Ty was looking for an idol. You know, we were shown a lot of that. And it really, I think, needs to be emphasized that Michelle was getting the edit and the content and the manipulation she was getting while at the same time never going to tribal council in the pre-merge.
Okay.
The best comparison to her, if you look at a recent non-winner in Michelle's archetype, Jacqueline from San Juan del Sur, her pre-merge episode ratings, she gets UTR2, 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 MORP2, CP4, UTR2. Michelle's pre-merge episode ratings, she gets CP2, UTR2, UTR1, UTR1, CP2, CP3. But the difference is, in San Juan del Sur, there were only two tribes, not three. So there is less that is required to be shown because they don't have a third tribe. And more importantly, Jacqueline went to tribal council in five of those six episodes, and she was still shown that small of an amount. The only one of those six episodes she didn't go to was episode four, when Drew Christie was voted off. So Jacqueline's edit was that bad that even though she was on a losing tribe and she could have gotten more strategic content, the editors didn't give it to her because she would not go on to win. They gave the content to John. They gave it to Josh and Jeremy. They gave it to John Rucker. They gave it to Baylor, you know, but they weren't giving any of it to Jacqueline.
Mm-hmm.
The only time Jacqueline was shown strategically was episode five, after the swap, where she and John Mish were shown as being the swing vote between the Missy and Baylor side of the new Coyopa tribe and the Wentworths side. So they're only showing Jacqueline being strategic when they have to show her being strategic, because it makes sense.
Hold on, though. With all due respect to the great Jacqueline Mish, is it possible that they weren't showing Jacqueline being strategic because Jacqueline, who's a recruit who comes into this show with her boyfriend, who I think is also either a recruit or maybe they applied to be on Amazing Race, whatever, but not coming in with a huge Survivor back catalog of knowledge, maybe doesn't start to be strategic until the point where maybe she has her feet under her a little bit in the game.
I mean, maybe she wasn't being strategic in that she was not making strategic decisions, but they weren't really showing her talking about anything.
Mm-hmm.
And if she was going to win, you know, they would most certainly want to show her where they could. That was the thing about Michelle that was the biggest sticking point, is that how much she was being featured, where if she wasn't going to win, she wouldn't be featured.
Got it.
For example, the biggest thing, and this is where I was sold, and I tweeted it at that minute, Michelle wins, that she was given the first confessional after the swap. So they go to the beach, they do the, you know, six of you on the new Gondal tribe, six of you on the new Chandler tribe. Julia, you're going to Braun Beach. Of all the people they could show talking about the swap, they could have given us Aubrey. They could have given us Ty. They could have given us Sydney. They've already shown us so far that we get much more interesting confessionals from them. They gave us Michelle. She talked about what the swap meant. She talked about what it meant to be separated from Anna and to be separated from Julia from an alliance that we had already been given four straight episodes of recap focus talking about how important this alliance is. And then here's Michelle talking about it.
Yeah.
And then after, I think there was a commercial, and then after they come back, the new Chan Lo tribe is split, two brain, two beauty, two brawn. Of all the six people, you have Debbie, you have Nick, you have Jason, you have Sydney, who you've all gotten more interesting confessionals from. You have Nick, But who do we get? We get Michelle. Michelle talks about the 2-2-2 split on Shanlow. She's shown talking about needing to adjust and wanting to read people until the time comes to make an alliance. And that sitting back and reading people and observing calls back to her very first confessional in the first episode about being a bartender and being observant. And so we start to see a through line to Michelle's strategy.
Mm-hmm.
She got to explain her challenge performance in confessional. So in episode 5 or 6, I can't remember off the top of my head, when I think it was episode 6, when the new Chanlo tribe lost the reward challenge and they come back and they're talking about, well, maybe Michelle will get voted out. But she gets a chance to explain her poor performance in confessional, and it's poor performance in a challenge that ultimately doesn't matter because, one, it's for reward, and two, Chanlo didn't go to tribal. So the setup about, well, you know, Michelle kind of didn't really perform in that challenge, she got to justify her performance and she got to remedy that performance by being shown as forming a bond with Debbie, who would ultimately vote for her to win.
Mm-hmm.
A really important thing too, that this is one of those things where if you're paying attention to the edit, you'll really hang your hat on, is in episode 5, Debbie says, "I want a woman to win," to Sydney. And if she had said that out of context and we don't see it again, then it can probably be ignored in passing. But that same quote is used in the recap of her talking to Sydney saying, "I want a woman to win." And then again in episode 6, she says, "I want a woman to win" again, mm-hmm. in a conversation with Michelle. And Debbie's "I want a woman to win" is kind of the winner is on this mat of Survivor Korong.
Right.
So like in Worlds Apart, when Lindsay says, "The winner's on this mat," if they say it one time, then fine. Maybe, you know, we don't have to pay that much attention to it. But then a couple episodes later, when the blue collar tribe goes to tribal council and Lindsay's shown again saying, "You know, I meant it when I said that the winner is going to come from this tribe," then it starts to get the gears turning.
No, I definitely picked up on that at the time. But I will say that, you know, I also was under the impression this season that I kept playing the clip of Ty talking about,
"I'm not going to go home with an eye on my pocket."
And then he obviously... I mean, I guess technically he did go home with an eye on his pocket, but I felt like that sort of implied that he was going to get screwed.
Yes. I mean, so sometimes they, you know, they do give foreshadowing like that. But, you know, in this case in particular, you know, it's talking about foreshadowing of a winner as opposed to foreshadowing of a game event, which Edgic isn't necessarily concerned with. So there's a very small distinction there, but it is, you know, it is a distinction. And technically, I guess Ty didn't go home with an idol in his pocket because he was never voted out with the idol or voted out at all.
Okay. All right. Well, let's not get too distracted with that. But yeah, no, I agree. Although just going back to the Aubrey and Michelle thing, you know, it was like, okay, well, we know Debbie's going to vote for a woman for a winner. We never thought Debbie was voting for Ty to win.
That's true. And a criticism that I have of the edit and that a lot of people have of the edit this season is a lot of times there are many seasons where we are given several viable winner candidates over the course of the season. And, you know, it could be A person, it could be B person. You know, for Cambodia, for example, for a lot of it could be Jeremy, but it could also be Spencer. You know, we see a lot of Spencer. We're seeing a lot of Spencer being strategic. We're seeing a lot of good things about Spencer. The thing about Spencer is in the finale, you could see how Spencer's game was kind of falling apart. And the edit showed Spencer's game falling apart and that, you know, that it wasn't as strong as it may have been earlier in the season. Whereas we did not get that from Aubrey. Mm-hmm. Aubrey looked like a viable winner candidate up until the second that Jeff, you know, read the fourth winning vote for Michelle. You know, that Debbie ended up voting for Michelle to win, and that Michelle said in exit press that Debbie said some really nice stuff about Michelle too, and the editors chose to leave that out, even though Debbie ended up voting for Michelle to win. Mm-hmm. And everyone was confused afterwards. We thought, well, Debbie had to be one of the votes for Aubrey, which meant Nick was one of the votes for Michelle. And that ended up being not correct.
Okay.
So it's not perfect, but you know, that is a criticism that I have this
Let's
season.
Get into that a little bit with Aubrey in terms of, you know, we talked about, okay, so those were some of the tells that Michelle was going to be the winner. But what was it that you guys were seeing about Aubrey that made you guys feel so confidently that Aubrey would not be the winner? Because especially like after the merge, I'm looking at Aubrey and she's a CP4. She's got even a CPP4, a CP3. So it looks like that Aubrey has, you know, maybe even better ratings than Michelle after the merge.
So I think that a general rule about EDGIC is that the pre-merge is more important editorially than the post-merge is. And there's going to be a lot going on in the post-merge, and the post-merge can be very important, but you can't focus solely on the post-merge at the expense of the pre-merge. So what did we get in the pre-merge from Aubrey? We got her indecisiveness emphasized, or her habit of panicking and overthinking, you know, especially the episode where she voted out Peter, you know, where she's going back and forth and she doesn't know what she wants to do. And then she's whispering to Joe at tribal council, you know, is it Julia? And she has a confessional where I don't know which way I want to go. It's going to come back to bite me. We get the confessional, I think, in that same episode earlier in the reward challenge, where she is in tears because she's talking about this is about making choices and I'm making the wrong choices. Now, this is all stuff that EDGIC is keeping in mind as the season goes, whereas if you're just watching the season and you see all of a sudden Aubrey's getting strategic content, she's being shown positively, where you might think, why not Aubrey? But she didn't have as solid pre-merge content as Michelle had been getting.
But even the Michelle pre-merge content is not that great in terms of the chart. Whereas, yes, certainly Aubrey has a wishy-washy first episode. I mean, we've talked about the Michelle UTR2, UTR1, UTR1. So it wasn't like Michelle was really lighting it up in the pre-merge. I mean, to me, I feel like that the bigger smoking gun is like what you're saying about in the previously ons, the confessional placement, and the fact that you're saying that Michelle's confessionals, when you had so many choices for narration to consistently go to Michelle, those seem like that those are the big three in terms of why you guys were able to zoom in on Michelle more so than the chart.
Correct. Yes. Much more so than the chart. And you know, another one that Michelle gets is kind of like with the swap of all the people who could get the first confessional about the tribes merging. They gave it to Michelle. She gets to talk about how excited she is to make the merge, that as a fan, it's been a dream of hers to make the merge. Now, why are we, and that's the question that goes through your head, is like, why are we getting this from Michelle? Why couldn't we get this from Scott talking about, you know, oh, I get to be, you know, immediately, I get
Undateable.
To be reunited with Jason, or Jason saying, I get to be reunited with Scott. But the first person we get it from Michelle, when we could have gotten it from other people. Also, a thing that was positive about her being a winner in the pre-merge is the bro I know exchange.
This one?
Bro, I know.
Yes. So
that's
she got
what
to,
all the EDGIC people said all season.
All season. She got to explain herself in that scene with Nick. Mm-hmm. She was shown having the upper hand in that exchange, that everything Nick said as far as manipulating Michelle, she was shown immediately afterwards acknowledging that that's what he was doing and contradicting him and saying that I'm going to let him think that he's doing this, but she doesn't need to be carried, bro.
I don't need to be carried, bro.
But I almost feel like that in some ways that this is almost like the counter argument to the smoking gun that you're talking about, where you have so many choices for narration. Why are we going to Michelle? And to tie this back to my earlier editing conversation with Molly, where she says the editors are going to use the best stuff. I mean, this is probably some of the best Michelle stuff of the whole season. So I kind of feel like that in some ways it's like it. Michelle wasn't the winner. I feel like we would certainly see this in the episode. This isn't something that they would throw out if she was the losing finalist.
Maybe not. And obviously, you know, that's a hypothetical and that's something that we'll never know. But if they wanted Michelle to look bad, they certainly didn't have to include that. You know, and you know, the typical young pretty
that's
girl.
That's so kid. Good.
Yes. So that's good.
Bro,
so maybe that
I know.
Would have been, maybe that would have been included, but certainly I don't think that we would have gotten her getting the first confessional after the swap or her getting the first confessional after the merge. She's not the only fan on the show that's happy to make the merge. You know, I'm sure they got great content from Aubrey, but they chose not to include that because they wanted to include and feature Michelle where they could.
You know, that's why this is so complicated in all this, where I feel like it makes more sense to me when you say like, okay, Michelle gets the first confessional after the swap, the first confessional after the merge, and she's saying like, oh, I feel good about my chances, or this, now I really have to go to work. But I feel like a lot of people pointed to Bro I Know and I Don't Have to Be Carried Bro as winner quote. That's it. She's winning now because of that. And I feel like that to me is less valuable because it was a great line and it was a great moment in the episode, more so than when she's talking about mundane things and we're sort of being forced to get a Michelle confessional where it doesn't fit.
Yeah. I think that it is dangerous to ever try and hang your hat on a winner quote. And I don't think that that's what Edgick wants to do. I do think there are a lot of people who did. You know, I've never ascribed to, you know, winner quote. They said this one thing that means they win. Unless, you know, you're going back to the beginning and you talk about like Richard Hatch winner quote in the first episode. You know, you're not always going to get things like that. And I think that, you know, and it's not, you know, I'm not trying to create here either a hard and fast rule of the person who gets the first confessional after the swap or the merge is going to be the winner, because I'm sure that an overwhelming majority of seasons, that's not the case. But in the context of this season, in the context of these characters, in the context of this story, this was pointing to Michelle being the winner more so than anybody else.
Okay. Anything else from Ko Rong you want to talk about in terms of Edgick?
I think the only thing is that the reason why we had kind of set on her at the pre-merge and then didn't really waver from that going forward is that she didn't really get any cracks in her edit from the conclusion to shake people from the conclusion that she would be the winner. The biggest, what I guess could be called a flaw in her edit, was that they showed her as being out of the loop. But Aubrey and Sydney voted for Scott and Michelle and Julia were kind of left hanging out to dry voting for Ty. But then you go back to the logic part of Edgick. That mistake makes sense in the context of reality because she didn't know they were voting for Scott. So they couldn't show her knowing any differently. You know, kind of like Natalie in San Juan del Sur when Jeremy's voted out. Of course, she's going to be out of the loop when Jeremy got voted out because she was left out of the loop when they voted out Jeremy.
Yeah.
They're going to show Michelle being as out of the loop when they vote out Scott because Aubrey and Sydney, et cetera, left Michelle out of the loop when they voted out Scott.
We've talked about so many interesting things with Edgick. I have some questions from the listeners who wanted to ask your thoughts on a couple of things. Why don't we start with Will Seaman, who says, in the past 10 seasons or so, at what point did the eventual winner become the top Edgick contender and remain there? We've talked a little bit about Tony, about he was sort of the unicorn, but what about for the other seasons, really, since like 20 or so?
Sure. So season 20, Edgick had picked Sandra by the episode that Coach was voted out. So that would be episode 8. So I think that was 2 episodes before the merge. Fabio was the episode after the merge. Rob was the episode after the merge. South Pacific was one of Edgick's misses that they had Coach or Dawn kind of going back and forth as the winner. And Sophie was in the mix, but she was never like the official pick. Kim, they had as the winner since episode 1, and she never moved from the number one contender the entire season. In Philippines, Denise was number one throughout the pre-merge, but then once they got to the merge, she kind of dropped below Malcolm and Lisa. And then she kind of hovered around number 2.
She's kind of invisible in the first part of the merge.
Yeah. So she was kind of, you know, she kind of dropped off the radar. In Caramoan, they had Cochran from episode 2. In Blood versus Water, they had Tyson from the episode after the merge. Prior to that was Monica. We talked about Kagyan was kind of a disaster. San Juan del Sur, it was Natalie in episode 6, and then she kind of fell off for 2 episodes, and then once Jeremy was voted out, it was Natalie all the way till the end. Mm-hmm. In season 30, it was Mike in the pre-merge, and then at the merge, it was Jen, and then from the episode after the merge, it was Mike. Cambodia was Jeremy from the episode before the merge all the way till the end.
Who was it before that?
Episode 1 was Spencer, 2 and 3 were Kelly, and 4 and 5 were Spencer.
Okay.
And then for Ko Rong, Michelle was the pick in episode 2, and then she dropped to second place for episode 3, 4, and 5.
Behind who?
3 and 4, it was Anna, and then episode 5, it was behind Sydney, because Anna was voted out. And then also in episode 5, we got all that personal content from Sydney.
Yeah.
Where she was talking about, you know, everybody thinks I'm not smart, she's a triple threat. She went to Penn and she's smart, and I'm going to let them keep thinking that I'm not smart. But then from episode 6 to the end, Michelle was the pick.
John Johnston wants to know, of the past 32 seasons, who has the highest ratings on the Edgic scale? Was there one player that just blew Edgic out of the water?
In what way? I mean, in terms of...
If you were going to compare winner to winner.
I guess if trying to interpret what he means by that question, I mean, Kim, they had from episode 1. You know, I guess that of all of them, I guess Kim is the best edgically because she was the winner pick from episode 1 and it never changed throughout the course of the season.
But what was it that she was doing? Because I'm looking at the chart that you sent me of all the winners and she's CPT2 in the first episode. Was it just a quote that she had? Or, I mean, I would think that you would be like, what's the best for a winner like that be? Do you want to be CPPP5?
There's no right answer to, you know, what's the best rating to have in a first episode. You know, I don't remember her confessionals off the top of my head, you know, but they're showing her being a strategic, but she's not super in your face compared to Sabrina. Because to that point, you know, you have to take into consideration that Survivor edits men and women differently. You know, they will show men being super strategic and super in control, male winners. You know, when you think about Rob, you think about Yule, you think about Earl, think about Todd and Cochran, you know, they're going to show them being strategic and being kind of in your face, like Tony. But, you know, Kim was strategic, but she was understated. And I think that for a winner, for a female winner, is a good thing to have. Same thing with Michelle this season, that she was strategic in the first episode, but she was a bit understated. Mm-hmm. Natalie doesn't really come into her own as kind of a strategic mastermind until Jeremy gets voted out. And that's also why, I mean, because males in San Juan del Sur, Josh and Jeremy and John were getting such strong edits, that's why so many people for such a long time thought that the winner was going to be one of those three. Mm-hmm. Because previously, if we're showing a man being very strategic and very CP, then usually that means good things for them. But then all of a sudden, Josh gets voted out and Jeremy gets voted out. And then Natalie kind of comes into her own. And then Natalie becomes mm-hmm. the winner pick going forward.
Kim, after the merge, she goes CPT2 in the episode where Jonas gets voted off. And then she has CP5, middle of the road 2, CP4, 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 CP5. So a nice post-merge run for Kim Spradlin.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Yes.
And then, you know, kind of the same thing with Natalie, where she's kind of under the radar. She gets an OTTN in the episode where she's flipping out at John Rocker, you know, and then she's MOR. She's CP3 in the episode before the merge where she goes to Exile Island with Baylor.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, she actually shot up. That was the first episode she actually appeared as a winner pick for Edgic. She was off the chart completely, you know, for episodes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then all of a sudden we're seeing her, you know, she's talking about why she wants to go with Baylor, why she thinks it's good to make a connection with someone from the other tribe. She disappears for the merge. As we talked about, you know, they're kind of hiding her from the Jeremy blindside, you know, and then she's CP3, CP5, CP3, CP5, CPP4, and CP4 in the finale.
Yeah.
And she's just, you know, strategic all the way through the end. But, you know, like I said, this whole time, there's never a right answer. There's no magic formula. It's just, you're looking at the edit critically. you're taking the circumstances of the players and the edit as it's coming to you, and you're trying to make a decision.
Umberto wants to know, and he had a birthday this week, so happy belated birthday to Humby.
Happy Hum birthday.
Explain the importance of background activities, like when we get to see a contestant complaining about somebody being lazy, and in the same episode we see them laying down or in the shade, or when we see a contestant talking about the fire a lot and they're unable to make fire. You talked about this a little bit with Debbie and Jason.
Yeah, with Debbie, I mean, that's just, you know, it kind of goes towards tone. You know, if someone is talked about in a negative way and they're showing in a way that supports that being negative, then that can give somebody a negative tone for that episode. The inverse is also true. If someone's talking about in a very positive way and they're shown as being positive, then they'll get rated positively. As for the fire thing, I don't know if that is necessarily, you know, that's necessarily going to be the, you know, spell doom from someone. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're shown not being able, if they're talked about not being able to make fire. I mean, that's just some kind of general foreshadowing kind of thing, like you were talking about with Ty not wanting to go home with an idol in his pocket, and then he turns out not to be true. I mean, making fire is, it's not necessarily super important. That's more foreshadowing immediately in the episode. In the finale of Korong, Sydney talking about, should I make fire? Michelle says, no, you don't need to fire.
Yeah.
And then she has to make fire and she can't do it. Some people put a lot of stock in showing whether a winner can make fire. I don't know if that's super important. I think it seems kind of obscure.
Mm-hmm.
But Michelle was shown as making fire this season in the episode when Scott and Jason and Ty were, you know, dumping out the water on the fire. Then they show her, you know, making fire.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a bad thing to show a winner doing, but
right,
you know, it's not going to be, oh, that person made fire, they're winning.
Right.
You know?
Like Cochran's making the fire at some point.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
David Baltazar wants to know, can EDGIC be applied to other competition shows like The Amazing Race, Project Runway, Top Chef, and The Genius? This season on The Amazing, well, if I'm going to some Amazing Race 28 spoilers ahead. This season on The Amazing Race, we were way off because to us, Jessica and I watching The Amazing Race, boy, Tyler and Corey were as OTTPP as it got in a 5 and a 6 even in visibility. And they were not the winners this season of The Amazing Race. Can EDGIC apply to these other shows?
I mean, as far as EDGIC, as far as the ratings, you know, I have never done it with other shows. I don't know if it necessarily can. I mean, obviously with every reality show, like you had Molly Shock say, you know, in any reality show, the editors are trying to tell a story. And a lot of the time, you know, they'll want that story to include the winner. I mean, sometimes the edits of Amazing Race, like this season, can kind of pull the rug out from under you. And then on the flip side, sometimes the edit of a show like Amazing Race can beat you over the head with it. Last season, the reporter saying, oh, we're always second. Oh, I can't believe we're always second. Well, we're going to win sometime. And you and Jess on the show saying, they're probably going to win. And lo and behold, you know, they get first place the one time it matters.
We got caught flat-footed this season. We did not see that coming. All right. Then let's a couple more questions. Derek Blaze wants to know, what do you think EDGIC would have to say about Rob's season in the Amazon if it were prevalent back then? Well, that was back in the early days of EDGIC. What was EDGIC saying about me?
I mean, I was not involved with it at that point, but I have to imagine, I mean, Amazon was the second full season they did EDGIC, so there was not a lot to work with, you know, as far as the history. I'm not sure exactly when they went back and did seasons 1 through 4. So they may have only had Thailand to go off of. I can imagine, though, that they would have been a little surprised with the ending.
Yes. Okay,
given how
I found the chart. I did a search for it. Okay.
So I am looking at the chart. And given how strategic you're shown and given kind of how negative and unstrategic they're showing Jenna being, she doesn't get a CP episode until the finale.
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine that people may have been a little surprised by Jenna as a winner.
Boy, so they have me CPM5, CP3, CPP5. How about that? I'm a CPP5. UTR P2, middle of the road neutral 3, CPN 4. I've got a middle of the road negative 5. How about that? How could you be middle of the road negative 5?
If you are very visible, if you are giving confessionals that are kind of in the moment and not necessarily very strategic, looking forward, mm-hmm. or about, giving us the hows and the whys, but also you are very visible,
yes.
Which gives the 5.
I got a CPM 5 in episode 8. Then I got an OTTN5. Go back and watch that Dina episode. How am I over the top negative 5?
I must be looking at a different chart than you are, because I have you in the Edgic chart on Unspoiled Edgickers Unite, yes. as a CPN4.
Yes,
in the
okay,
Dina episode.
Good. All right. Well, again, see, there's disagreement in the Edgic community.
There are differences.
Get out of here with that OTTN5. Stop it.
Yeah.
All right. Interesting stuff to go back. Hopefully, people think I'm very CPPP5. In
very
this podcast.
Secret.
Okay. And then one last question. Let's do this one. This is from Brendan Fitzpatrick. And I think that this is a question that a lot of people want to know. Do you feel like the prominence of systems like Edgic have either enhanced or detracted from the overall enjoyment of the show? Is this too much analysis to a degree? So after episode 5 or 6, where it's like, okay, crack the case, Michelle's the winner. Does that take away from the rest of the season from you, or do you feel like, oh, well, maybe then, things could change?
I mean, that kind of ties into, I think, why there's been so much of a backlash against Edgic this season. And I think that the Survivor fandom at large has gotten kind of used to a winner also being a dominant player, especially in this big moves era of Survivor. And, the explosion of social media. If you look back through, winners over the past 10 seasons or so, an overwhelming majority of them have been very dominant strategic players also. You look at Jeremy, Mike, Natalie, Tony, Tyson, Cochran, Denise to a lesser extent, but she was still very prominent in the pre-merge during Matt Singh, Kim Spradlin. You have to go back to Sophie before you really see a winner who does not fit in the general consensus of what the fan community thinks a winner should be, mm-hmm. or should look like. And back in South Pacific, Survivor social media was not and Survivor discussion online was not the juggernaut that it is now, with the subreddit and with many different podcasts and Facebook groups and what have you. So this is the first season in a long time where the winner has not looked like those previous winners. And Edgic has just been doing what it's been doing all along. Edgic people were saying last season that Jeremy won. Edgic people were saying 2 seasons ago that Mike would win. And no one seemed to have a problem with that because they could see how Jeremy could be a winner. They could see how Mike could be a winner. And plenty of non-Edgic people were also saying, Jeremy will probably win, Mike will probably win. But the definition of a good player in this season, the people that fit that the most were Aubrey and Sydney, and Michelle maybe didn't because she was kind of in the background. Mm-hmm. She wasn't shown as controlling the game. She wasn't shown as masterminding the votes. And then when she wins, and like I had said earlier, they really didn't do a good job this season of showing why Aubrey could lose, then you get a negative reaction.
Right. So I feel like that to the people watching the show, the conventional wisdom was like, okay, Aubrey's got this, or maybe Sydney got this. Whereas Edgic sort of interjected into the conversation that, well, actually, what we're seeing is that Michelle is going to win. And people are like, get the hell out of here. There's no way Michelle can win. That doesn't jive with what I'm seeing on the screen. Like, well, actually, look at this chart. Look at this. Yeah. Look at where this quote is. And so that people might have felt like that. No. That's crazy talk. That's crazy talk. Because really, the Michelle victory should have been for everybody.
Total blindside.
And it was really only because of Edgic and that discussion that people were feeling like, okay, it's between Michelle or Aubrey going into the finale.
That's what I think the big problem was too, is that even if you weren't looking at some previous winners, talking about like specifically, you know, their dominant play, you know, if people are talking about Jeremy winning, you could see a path to the end for Jeremy watching the episodes. You could see a path to the end for Mike watching the episodes. Yes, Mike has to do the improbable and win immunity after immunity, but you could see it happening. Watching the season as it went along, you know, the Edgic people had said, you know, Michelle is going to win. That was the conclusion they came to. But people, even the Edgic people, couldn't see watching the episode, what is the path to the end for Michelle? You know, just looking at the episodes as they are being shown to us, you see Michelle is on the bottom. You see that she's not, you know, that she's losing Julia. She's not super close with, she's not being super close with Aubrey or with Joe. She is seen as a target, and nobody knows how she's going to get to the end or what she's going to do to win. A thought process that I'd seen a lot of places is there would probably be a final two, and that Michelle would probably be in the final two with Ty, because once Ty kind of flipped and started being seen as someone who was flipping back and forth and was starting to be getting a little more negative content and was shown as not being trustworthy, you could kind of see a path where Michelle goes to the end, she goes to the end with Ty, and Michelle beats him because nobody likes Ty anymore. But we never saw a path to the end based on what they were giving us in the episode, where Michelle goes to the end with Aubrey and then beats Aubrey. So I think that, you know, that caused a lot of confusion, and that it was a blindside for a lot of the audience because nobody could see how that would have happened. Mm-hmm. And I think that being told by Edgic people that Michelle was going to win and the non-Edgic people couldn't fathom how that would happen, I think that that kind of ruined some people's enjoyment of the show. And that's why you got people in the episode before the finale, or before the finale, when people are asking about who do you think's going to win, you know, and there were people saying, well, I hope Michelle doesn't win only because I want the Edgic people to be wrong. You know, I want all these Michelle truthers to get their comeuppance, that they've been sticking this in our face all season. Michelle's going to win, and I want her to lose because of that. That's never happened before. Mm-hmm. No one said, Edgic people say Jeremy's going to win. Well, I hope they're wrong because I want Jeremy to lose because I want them to be wrong. I want the Edgic people to be wrong about Mike. I want them to be wrong about Natalie. And no one's ever said that before. Mm-hmm. This is just kind of a perfect storm of...
Perfect Rebecca.
Perfect Rebecca, or a perfect Sydney of Ev. A relatively understated winner, of someone who was more social than strategic, of some choices the editors made to necessarily not show a losing finalist really in a negative light, talking about Aubrey, obviously, and, you know, a confusing path to the end for the winner, just looking at the episode, and, you know, you kind of put that all in a pot, and you get people being upset that they're being told that Michelle is winning.
Well, I think this has been a fascinating discussion in learning about what exactly Edgic is. I feel like I have a much greater understanding about how it all works, and I do appreciate that. And it'll be interesting to see how this conversation changes going into Survivor 33, and if there's any reaction from Survivor after how people responded to Survivor 32 in terms of how the edit went. And I wonder if maybe they're going to come back and now hit us with the jab while we're all looking for the right hook.
Yeah, I mean, it would certainly be interesting to see if they change what they do. I mean, they haven't done it yet, but Edgic has never been as prominent in the discussion as it's been this season. And I would be very interested to see a version of Survivor where the winner maybe isn't telegraphed, or they're giving us many viable options throughout the course of the season. That was kind of a criticism of the Worlds Apart edit, where it kind of looked like there was no other viable option to be a winner besides Mike. And that's why the last couple episodes maybe got a little less interesting, because some of the other people that Mike was going to the end with had been edited so poorly that there was no chance that any of them would win because we didn't get anything from them. So I would love to be surprised with a winner. You know, I think that Kaguyan is a great season for that very reason, because we didn't know that Tony was going to win. And, you know, it was a big surprise for everybody. So going forward, if they decide to change because of Edric, I'm open to it.
Good. That's what makes it fun.
Exactly.
That's what I think. All right. So if people want to know more about Edric, then there are lots of different places that people can go to. What are some of the top Edric forums and communities?
For me, I think that the preeminent Edric community is Unspoiled Edricers Unite. I'll give you the link, but it's unspoilededricersunite.yuku.com. You have to ask for permission. Basically, you have to send a message to the administrator telling them, you know, that you are not going to be spoiled, you know, and then you're given access. But I think that's where the best discussion's happening. Some other places, there were some happening on the Survivor subreddit, but because of the backlash from people being upset about Edric this season, I think some of those people have moved to a new subreddit, reddit.com/r/Edric, where people can talk about Edric with abandon.
Yes.
Of course, there's the thread on Survivor Sucks, which is where it started and where it continues to this day. So I think those are the three main places if you're interested.
And let me shout out to the subreddit, the Edric subreddit, to Jonathan, who started it, who sent me an email, who listens to the podcast. So definitely RHAP friendly over there.
Yes. And I want to give shout out to Pia, who recommended me to do this podcast when she unfortunately could not do it. She and I have had a lot of Edric discussions, you know, both over Facebook and in person at the Live Know-It-Alls, and she's great. So shout out to Pia. Thanks to her for.
Yes, great job, Pia, who you know, was very nervous about coming on to do this. So you did a great job here, Zach. I really appreciate your hard work in explaining this all to us, and I hope that we answered everybody's questions. And definitely looking forward to seeing what the feedback is going to be on robinswebsite.com. All right, now we need a hashtag. I've got a bunch of different suggestions for you. You ready?
Okay.
I've got education.
Okay.
I've got Captain Q.
Okay.
I've got Toneless Flacos.
Okay.
Got hashtag Mixed Trimming. Mm-hmm. Hashtag Perfect Rebecca.
Okay.
And hashtag RHAPP.
Okay. Oh, man. There's so many. I mean, I think the first one was the best. You know, I think I want to stick with education.
Okay, education.
Hopefully that's what this was. Hopefully that's what it will be for people who listen to it, who don't know Edric, and hopefully, you know, going forward, this can be, you know, something that people get pointed to if they don't understand it or are interested in getting involved going forward.
All right.
I do like, I have to give the honorable mention to Toneless Flacos, though. So.
Yeah, he's the best. All right, so we've got a lot more coming up this week on the podcast. We're going to continue rolling along with our off-season podcast. I also have to give a shout out to Angie Kontz, who's been such a big help with trying to get the ball rolling on scheduling all these off-season shows that we've been talking about doing. Still working on that Michelle post-season podcast. Hopefully, we will get a chance to sit down with her this week, talk about her game in greater detail. I'm going to be talking with Cassandra from Big Brother Canada. That's going to be live on Tuesday. Were you a Cass fan, Zach?
I loved Cassandra.
Yes. So that should be a lot of fun.
I was a big Cass fan.
Yeah. Who wasn't?
Who exactly?
Who wasn't?
What were you doing with yourself?
Yeah, that's right. So our march to Big Brother 18 also continues. You can sign up for the Big Brother live feeds. They're doing a lot of fun stuff coming up on the lead up to Big Brother 18 on there with their showing different old episodes and things like that. You could sign up for the Big Brother live feeds through the website at robinsonwebsite.com/live feeds. And of course, that we are also planning our big RHAP event in Chicago coming up this summer at DePaul University, the 8th and 9th of July. That's coming up. If you want to get ticket information, you can go to rahapcon.com. That's RHAPCON.com. Zach, if people want to follow you, where's the best place that they can reach you? If you want people to reach you.
Yes, people can reach me. If they want to correct any of my Edric pronouncements, I'm more than open to it. I am on Twitter at Zach Attach, JD. It's Zach Attack, but Zach with a CH and Attack with a CH. So they could find me there.
Okay. Great stuff. Really looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say. And the off-season Summer of Rob continues later on this week, plus News AF continuing. So make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Go to robisthewebsite.com/iTunes. And we also appreciate your daily votes for post-show recaps nominated for two podcast awards at podcastawards.com. Take care, everybody. Bye.